Hello, friends. Well, I'm continuing here. Today is the 3rd of September. This series of programs began for the initiation mystery week retreat for the Blue Rose Sisterhood, but as I explained, somehow I managed to make a silent movie out of it for the third initiation. We still have some things on the second and the first initiation, which I'm going to review and I think I'd like to share with you. And now I'm continuing with this sort of redo of these programs, this time presumably with sound. And I've received a lot of comment from people that they find it of value. Of course, I have a much longer compilation on the third initiation than this abbreviated one. And I'll see if I can go over those points as time may allow for me. Now, the last one I did, it was some time ago, actually. But we're beginning here with number four. This is actually the number four, the redo number four, the 3rd of September. And I'll just going to try some various methods. I have a lot of duties here at our Little Bear Meditation Center up here north of the Arctic Circle, almost 70 degrees north latitude, where autumn is fast arriving. But I'll leave this on, and in case I get called away, I will continue to work at it and get it sent to you. Now let's see what we have here. The first one, yeah. It says, after the third initiation, the way is carried forward with great rapidity. Now, this is interesting that he calls it the way. The way really begins with the way of higher evolution, which is the path of the monad after the sixth initiation. But already the monad is actively felt at this point, and so perhaps he has a reason for calling it the way. And the bridge is finished. The bridge, and by that, of course, we mean the Antikarana, is finished after the third initiation, not before, which links perfectly the higher spiritual triad and the lower material reflection. Now, when we're talking about the higher spiritual triad, we are talking about the Buddhic and the Atmic levels, and not the level that is still within the dense physical body of the solar logos, which is the monastic permanent atom. So that's something to bear in mind, and notice he does, this word higher is important. So the lower material reflection, well, is the word reflection exactly correct? Let's call it the soul-infused personality. And it's a kind of a correspondence rather than maybe a direct reflection, which turns everything upside down. So anyway, this means, and I'll put that in here, the Buddhic permanent atom and the Atmic permanent atom, O-A-T, are approached. I cannot say touched, because on the highest two planes of the Buddhic plane and the Atmic plane, we have cities which pertain to the Chohan and to the seventh degree Chohan. Well, of course, he does say after the third initiation, so maybe he's carrying it this this far, but it seems to me that, well, a seventh degree Chohan would have some atmic abilities, yes. The question is, when is the Temple of Ezekiel, the monadic temple, actually destroyed? Is it destroyed after the sixth initiation, or can it be retained for use? Perhaps retained for use. The three worlds of the soul and the three worlds of the personality become one world wherein the initiate works and functions. Well, okay, so this is, let's call this, this means the soul-infused personality is available as an instrument, but not after the fourth initiation, at which time it has to be replaced by a Maya Rupa because it is destroyed, or let's say at least dissipated, if not entirely dispersed. But we're talking about, you know, the third initiation here, and although we are in a way reaching to the heights, we're not quite there yet. So the three worlds of the soul and the three worlds of the personality. Now, you know, truly, what is the soul? The soul, or higher ego, is really the spiritual triad. And eventually these three worlds will be united with the Mayavarupic extension of the spiritual triad, or with the extension of the monad as the personality which is infused by the spiritual triad and even by the monad. So the initiate works in this world where the higher has descended into the realm of lower consciousness. The initiate works and functions seeing no distinction, viewing one world as the world of inspiration, and we can understand what that is, and the other as the world constituting the field of service. The world of inspiration, of course, for people such as you and myself, is the world of the soul. But increasingly, after the third initiation, it becomes the world of the triad, of the buddhic plane, of the atmic plane, and even of the monad at a certain point. He tells us after the fourth initiation, the monad is contacted more directly, and its influence is strongly felt. Yet all of this is regarded, these two are regarded together, both together, as forming one world of activity. Of these two worlds, the subjective etheric body, or the body of vital expression, and the dense physical body are symbols on the external plane. So we have right before us the world of inspiration. Let's call it quite authentically, the world of inspiration is the world of the higher ethers, and the world of service, or field of service, is the lower three subplanes of the cosmic physical plane. And we see what an excellent kind of example we have here. You know, if we look at that, we do see that there is a four above and a three below. So these four systemic ethers represent the higher ethers, logoic, monadic, atmic, and buddhic ethers, and the three lowest systemic subplanes represent the mental, emotional, and physical vehicles. Well, anyway, things begin to move fast for us, and we begin to connect with what we really are. We really are the monad. We really are the monad in extension through self-attenuation. Maybe I can call it that. We really are the M-I-E-X, monad in extension, through self-attenuation, which means that we circumscribe our field of consciousness increasingly within lower fields of matter, not allowing it in those lower fields to extend yet into the higher fields until the business of redeeming the lower fields is accomplished. So we're a bit like a cone, we're a bit like a vortex, you know. Let's see, our identity is like a vortex. It's like a vortex with the higher aspect of the vortex in the world of inspiration, and the lowest and the lower aspects in increasingly dense worlds or planes. I think, you know, if we kind of visualize a vortex or kind of a tornado, of course, it's interesting how with tornadoes, the there's an upward drafting movement, and much from the lower worlds is brought into the tornado and lifted. Now, of course, it's a poor copy because, you know, sometimes cars are picked up and dumped a long way away from where they were picked up, elevated. But in the case of the monad, that which is from the lowest planes is brought into the highest planes. So heaven descends to earth, and earth arises into heaven. It's a dual process. It's a sort of a loose analogy here. At the same time, it is possible for the energies from the world of inspiration to touch down and do their redeeming work. And the more we become the monad in extension consciously, the more we can redeem the lower vibrations with the higher vibrations from the world of inspiration. So I like this paragraph very much, you know, just reading it as it is. At the third initiation, the way is carried forward with great rapidity. Even in the same life, you know, the fourth initiation can be taken in the same life as the third, and sometimes the fifth can be taken as the same life as the fourth, you know. It makes rapid progress very possible for people, especially when you think that the second, third, and fourth can be taken in the same life. DK says it's the usual thing to happen, but if we use his disciples as an example, it seems a pretty rare thing, actually. And the bridge is finished, which links perfectly the higher spiritual triad and the lower material reflection. Until we begin to live the spiritual or holy life in the worlds below, the three worlds of the soul and the three worlds of the personality become one world wherein the initiate functions. Those lines that are on our maps will not exist in the consciousness of the initiate, seeing no distinction, viewing one world as the world of inspiration and the other as the world constituting the field of service. I'd like to darken that even more because it's so somehow important. Yet regarding both together as forming one world of activity, and that's not the case for us, is it? We do involve, conceive of the world of inspiration as above and sometimes inaccessible and sometimes apparently capriciously present, but difficult to achieve, and that's not the case for the true initiate. Yet regarding both together as forming one world of activity, our elevator of consciousness can go from high to low, from low to high, without those unseemly barriers or breaks. One world of activity. Of these two worlds, the subjective etheric body, or the vital body of vital inspiration, systemically considered, you know, down here on the lowest subplane, divided in half, the lowest subplane of the cosmic physical plane, and the dense physical body are symbols of the external plane, symbols on the external plane. So I showed how that works. And increasingly during the Aquarian Age, we're going to be moving into that vital body, and we're going to be able to see vitally, etherically, and understand those phenomena, and understand that as an important world of causation within the systemic lower systemic planes, and that so many conditions that we have will be working out according to the condition of the systemic body of vital inspiration. Now, the cosmic body of vital inspiration is the higher four ethers. Well, you know, one could expand on these things. The important thing is to be able to do it, you know, and be able to experience these matters. And first, I guess, there are those who venture into the jungle and terra incognita without a map, and they are very brave, and hats off to them, and they discover many things fast and the hard way. And there are those who, like ourselves, are reading the map, so that when we land in these worlds, perhaps we know what we are doing and do not stumble into avoidable and dangerous circumstances that are unnecessary to us if we understand the map. When the living, vibrating Antaskarana or bridge, notice Antaskarana, sometimes in the old books it's called Antaskarana. I like the word because it, you know, I know I'm jumping languages here, but this spelling suggests a task. And it is a big task for would-be disciples such as ourselves to advance our process in mastering the art of meditation and enter the worlds of inspiration. It's just a task of entering the world of inspiration. Let's see. Why don't I... W-O-I-N. Let me do that. Thinking that it will be useful. World of inspiration. Okay. Right. So, vibrating Antaskarana, how it vibrates and what are the hyper-physical dynamics, you know, involved in the world of light, involving harmonization and resonance and all of that. That has yet to be revealed, but we can at least learn how to use it using DK's methods. When the living, vibrating Antaskarana or bridge is built, this way of escape becomes the normal path of life. And let's just say a way of escape for those who wish not to escape, but wish to serve. Okay, well, if we want to use it with some of its powers, escape from pain is then automatic, for the center of consciousness is elsewhere. And I think, you know, people going through very difficult things can transfer their consciousness into higher worlds and thereby escape, if they wish, some of the dire circumstances. But, of course, it's possible to stay in the lower worlds and still, in a way, escape. And that's when one field is created, not two fields. One field, how does he say, one field of service. Seeing no distinction, it's one world of activity. So, in the case mentioned above, and where the Antaskarana is not consummated, a consummated established fact, the tiny thread of the partially constructed way of escape under tremendous pressure and excitation shoots forward like a quivering band of light and momentarily touches the light of the self. So this is the mystical ecstasy, and it can also be called the, I call it the, kind of funny word, astral Buddhic leap. where it's possible to touch the higher worlds under great aspirational pressure. But it's not so easily reduplicated. We want the scientific method of reduplication. Hence, ecstasy and exaltation. But it does not last and cannot be consciously recovered until the third initiation has been taken. And so we assume at that initiation more than a partially constructed way of escape. Oh, that's woe, isn't it? Woes, that won't work. A way of escape. Well, has been created. And that the way of escape becomes the way of daily livingness, to translate inadequately the occult and ancient phrase. Then pain is steadily transcended, and the pairs of opposites, pleasure and pain, the pleasure of the soul and the pain of the personality, I presume, have no longer a hold over the disciple. Disciple may fail at times, but never for long. And the general personality condition is not allowed to inhibit his spiritual effectiveness. Right, okay. So the way of daily livingness with access. Now, at the third initiation, it is presumed that the kind of bridge built is the bridge from the mental unit to the monastic permanent atom. By the time the third initiation is reached, the bridge is fairly solid. How about that? Between the mental unit and the monastic permanent atom, but not necessarily between the mental unit and the Buddhic permanent atom, and the mental unit and the Atmic permanent atom, or at least the higher reaches of the Buddhic plane and the higher reaches of the Atmic plane. Now, that has yet to be decided or determined, whether there can really be a reaching to the permanent atoms involved, or at least some kind of rapport established between the upward tending bridge, or inward tending, or intensifying bridge, and those higher permanent atoms, which are located on planes to which only the seventh degree Chohan has real access in terms of its cities. So you notice he doesn't list any cities, powers, that pertain to the second and first level of the Buddhic plane and the second and first level of the Atmic plane, because they pertain to Chohanship and beyond the range of the master. But the question is, as the bridge is built, what kind of rapport does it come into with respect to those permanent atoms? Okay. Now, okay, and that's from Esoteric Psychology 2. You know, the Tibetan has scattered his wisdom and his knowledge throughout the books. And, you know, I guess I've been reading these books now for almost 50 years, and a lot of theosophical books before that. And I'm just realizing what a master work it is, and how all the pieces are there, you know, in a Mercurian manner, but they have to be fused together under Jupiter in order to create a holism of wisdom. You know, gather the parts, and create, if I can be allowed to use such a phrase, gather the parts, and create a what? Holism of wisdom. Or we say comprehensive knowledge, relatively comprehensive certainly for us, but then again, a drop in the bucket when it comes to such a mind as the Tibetans. He's giving us the ABCs, and for us, it's like the ocean. But it's enough, more than enough, and especially if we could learn to apply it. That therein lies the test. Knowing is one thing, but I've mentioned this before, and it's always struck me as quite a humorous statement, you know, coming out of the wisdom that even a donkey can carry a library on his back. I think I've been that kind of donkey for a long time, but I just as soon assimilate now the wisdom and help everybody and help you, help us all to assimilate the wisdom in anticipation of the third installment of the teaching, which is coming out from 2025 onward. He does mention a lot about astrology in 2025. Of course, it's, you know, astrology is the third ray science in a way, and it's the third installment. So I think it'll have a lot of the third ray in it, this next installment, but plenty of the first ray as well. All right, here's another reference. Service. An understanding of the way and the building of the true line of escape. Escape for those who do not wish to escape. I have to emphasize that. You know, escape for those who do not, who can empower themselves, excuse me, on the higher planes, but return to serve. So escape for those who empower themselves on the higher planes, but return to the lower planes to serve. True line of escape. That is the task to be carried forward upon the path of discipleship. Well, you know, we aspire, even on the path of discipleship, we aspire, but we use more and more of the mind and will, scientifically applied in occult manners, spiritually occult manners, to make our progress. So presumably, you know, if we really stick with this material and apply it, we're going to be identifying ourselves on the path of discipleship, not just a now and then type of aspirant when the mood hits us, but somebody who persists no matter what. Such is the object set before all the students of the esoteric sciences, at this time, esoteric art and sciences. The mind makes something a science, and the Buddhic plane makes something an art. So does art precede science? Does science precede art? I think that once we really know the knowing, we can make of it an art to be applied according to intuition and inspiration. Such is the object set before all the students of the esoteric sciences at this time, provided they desire it enough. Now notice that. You know, you can almost tell, or often tell at least, where somebody is standing by the nature of his or her desires. What do you really want, you know, and why do you want it? So we have to choose our desires and eliminate some of them which really don't lead very far, and cultivate those which really lead into the worlds of inspiration, so we can be like a retriever, you know, a disciplic retriever, and bring back from the world of inspiration that which can serve in the lower worlds. And provided they desire it enough and can train themselves to work selflessly for their fellow men. And notice the training is involved here. The meek shall inherit the earth. That means the trained shall inherit the earth. That's what Alice Bailey tells us. And DK says, well, you know, service is difficult. And people say, oh, service is easy. But he's the one who's experienced. And a lot of the masters have given up a great deal of spiritual opportunity and perhaps incentive in order to take care of the kids in the kindergarten, which here we are, you know. So only a great understanding of infinity and eternity, very, very high types of understanding pertaining to the world of being, can so condition the consciousness that it willingly, even joyously, gives up the possibility of experiencing those things right here and now, which could be experienced, and deferring the experience until later so that others may be served. Apparent others, not really others at all. There are no others. And that's one of the things that dawns upon us. Naught is but me. And can train themselves to work selflessly for their fellow men. As they succeed in doing this and approximate ever more closely to that which is not the pairs of opposites and can thus achieve the central way, it reminds you of the Shushumna, which is the path of the spirit, the Shushumna. I'm going to misspell this. Shushumna. Let's see if I have it any place. No, I don't. Shushumna. The path of the spirit, the central channel. Then steadily the law of repulse swings into operation. It's not this, not that. You know, this is the idea perceiving the world through what we call neti, neti. Not this, not that. And it's something else which is inclusive of both. But something else which is inclusive of the normal pairs of opposites, which we call the soul and personality. So, we're not pulled one way, we're not pulled another. We're pulled into that inclusive state of being, which includes consciousness and activity, the consciousness of the soul and the activity of the personality. And this is the third, might call it the third way. It is available to us at a certain point of repulsion. We repel the pairs of opposites, and yet we see them as one thing merged in the one identity, which is being. When the third initiation is taken, this law of repulse, will begin to hold the dominant place in the ruling of the life. And yet, notice that he has given the law of repulse, LW, okay, LORP, well, let me see if I can get that in there, LORP, law of repulse. Notice that he has given this to people like ourselves. Well, he's given it to those that he knows are initiates of the first degree. So he has given the law of repulse for the reading of first degree initiates. And they should understand something of it, but it's very powerful after the third degree. And that's very interesting. Some of these laws of the soul, you know, extend very high and might even be called laws to be applied to the spiritual triad. So some of the laws of the soul, light of the soul, okay, let's see. Of the soul, law of the soul. That's pretty good. See, laws of the soul, laws of the soul. Got it. Trying to remember one's codes, you know. Some of the laws of the soul apply to very high states. In which the spiritual triad is already active, and the antikarana, quite sufficiently built. So we have to train ourselves. We have to desire the higher worlds, and for the sake of service, and not just for escape. We have to become initiates into the mysteries of being, if we possibly can. DK gives us a hint about himself. He says he is a initiate into the mysteries of being, and this should tell us something about him, and it should minimally tell us he's a fourth degree initiate and probably a master. He was hinting at that, even though he would not give his name as Joao Kuhl until it was inadvertently or mistakenly released by Alice Bailey at the bottom of a particular missive or commentary, dictation, something of that nature. And then DK used it as a test for those who had received the information and perhaps were overjoyed to understand who the Tibetan really was. But he said, well, the way you respond, the way you react to the information which has now been mistakenly given will tell me a lot about your discipleship and about your, you know, your worthiness, as it were, the degree of your spiritual maturity. Okay, well, this is going to be, I'm going to take one of those little breaks which I have to take as other duties are calling, and I'll leave this on, and hopefully it will not be corrupted while I am away. There's so much, you know, we're really here in a kind of a study group together. Now, in a study group, of course, everybody gets a chance to talk, but this time I'm giving you my impressions. And I think, you know, what is important, you can use this material in study groups if you like, you know, just use some player. And when you want to stop and discuss something, just hit the pause button and discuss it. So it can be a useful instrument. It'll be a bit like teaching a class, and then you can add your own comments as you feel inclined, and maybe it can serve as a source of inspiration, and if not inspiration, at least as a source of certain ideas which or thoughts which may be found useful and stimulating. Okay. A little breathless from climbing the stairs back. This is what it means to have a first-ray wife who's more at home in the world of Vulcan than I am, you know, born in the last degrees of Capricorn. The Sun, Mercury, and Vulcan are all together, and they touch the material plane, something which a second-ray and third-ray type, such as I am, is not too adept at doing. So she's continuing with her work in the lower three subplanes of matter, while I'm taking the opportunity to talk to you about these things which are pertaining to the mental and intuitional planes. Of course, she has that ability too, so a very wide range. And maybe one day I'm going to learn how to deal with matter per se. I keep on telling myself, well, maybe that happened in some previous lives, you know, and maybe I'm not as quite as hopeless and helpless in the field of matter as I sometimes blame myself for being. Well, let's see. Time will tell. Anyway, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to continue with you. There's a lot to say and a lot to study. Of course, the Tibetan has said what needs to be said, but we amplify, we enlarge upon that. And, you know, hopefully connections can be made in the realm of Mercury, which will bring more light into our understanding. And we can become successful light bearers in a world which is darkened by the ignorance of overwhelming glamour, mostly caused by mistaken identity. You know, thinking that we are the shell that we are, the outer man, and even the personality when we're something quite different, more interior. Anyway, moving on here, this is from Esoteric Astrology. Of course, I have, some of you will know that I've sort of gone word by word, phrase by phrase, line by line through the astrology book, trying to give thoughts that may be of use, and that you can find those on Makara. But here are also some thoughts, and we're talking specifically about the third initiation. So what we're doing here is what's called topical study. And that allows us to really zero in on the particular subject in question. It is only when the soul is becoming more alive within the form, we might say consciousness of unity, is becoming more alive within the usual personality consciousness. Okay. And man is aware of his duality. Yes, he does become more aware during the Hall of Learning experience, during petals number 4, 5, and 6, that the energies of the fixed cross supersede in effectiveness those of the mutable cross. So a mutable cross certainly rules the Hall of Ignorance, and it does rule in a diminishing way the Hall of Learning, but from the time we're dealing with the latter part of the fifth petal, the fixed cross is coming into view, fading in, we might say. Just as after the third initiation, the energies of the cardinal cross begin to control the man and are of more insistent incentive than those of the other two crosses. You have to like the words that are chosen, a kind of prompting, a kind of attraction, a kind of lure, which occurs persistently, insistently, ever more insistently until it becomes persistent. Now, this does not mean, that the man is on the cardinal cross yet. Really only at the fifth initiation does he truly mount the cardinal cross, even though the energies of the cross are beginning to compete with those of the fixed cross. The fixed cross is the cross of the soul, we know, and it's interesting that the soul ray, if we examine the constitution of the spiritual triad, is still active in the triad, even up to the fifth initiation. So it's not like that particular sub-ray of the monad fades out by any means at the third initiation. It does persist, even though the initiations we take, initiations 4 and 5 are taken on the ray of the monad, and sometimes he even mentions that initiation 3 is taken on the ray of the monad, and sometimes he says it's taken on the ray of the sub-ray of the monad, namely the egoic ray. Probably both are active in some way in these internal egoic groups. Anyway, what we want to happen is that the soul, this sense of wholeness, this sense of connectedness, this sense of oneness, of unity, etc., becomes more alive in our normal personality consciousness. And what we used to see with only personality consciousness, we begin to see in a new light, literally. So, to see in a new light. That is what we want. And you know the old saying, in that light we shall see light. So the lesser light, when raised to a certain point of intensity, will reveal a greater light, will reveal the presence of a more subtle, more rapid vibration, which has always been there, but which has not been noticed. And it'll be interesting to see how lights blend with lights, what actual hyperphysics occurs to make the registration in consciousness of a greater vibration possible. All those things lie ahead, you know, on the fifth ray, probably when the internal worlds are studied with the fifth ray and not only the external worlds. Okay, that which is, now there's more here in esoteric astrology, that which is fluid and changeable in Gemini produces the great shift in consciousness which distinguishes the initiate from the disciple. Well, great shift. Certainly one is now a real member of the ashram, or more authentic member, or what can we say, a less peripheral member of the ashram. You know, D.K.'s disciples were accepted and they stood approaching the second degree, many of them on the periphery of the ashram, and there are certain charts that seem to show that those who are, this chart, for instance, will show that if you're a disciple, you're still within the circle of hierarchy, your various disciples of various grades, and here's this blue circle. Now, our brother Keith Bailey colored this all in to give us a better view of the qualitative nature of these circles. But within this blue circle, it's the circle of hierarchy, and disciples are found within it. Even people on the probationary path are found within it. So it's definitely peripheral down here. But by the time we get to initiations 3 and 4, and not just the initiations of the threshold 1 and 2, we're not so peripheral to the ashram. We're more included in the ashram on our own right, and we are beyond the stage of accepted discipleship. You might call it, in a way, accepted initiate, something of that nature. So, in that light we shall see light, right? That which is fluid and changeable in Gemini produces the great shift in consciousness which distinguishes the initiate from the disciple. Do we know what that shift is? Do we have enough experience to understand what that shift really is? And I think, you know, it's the esoteric sense is greater, and the sense of ashramic intimacy is, of course, greater. This is the third initiation becomes a fixed attitude in Capricorn, and this is the sign most related to the third initiation. So that which is this a fixed attitude, not just a fluid and changeable attitude, touching sometimes the world of the soul and sometimes not. And, you know, that's characteristic of Gemini. The concrete form is transcended while still being utilized, it must be added, and the inner man reorients and assumes an unchangeable direction. Now, on the path of discipleship, some of this unchangeability is coming in, certainly much more so than, you know, what happens on the path of aspiration, where we have constant variation and vacillation and coming and going and approaching and retreating and waxing intense and waning. You know, all of these dualities are found partially ruled by Gemini. You know, so it's a very instability is doing its work, as it is said in one of the mantras concerning Gemini. But this fixed attitude, while Capricorn is not a fixed sign, it's a cardinal sign, it does have a very strong will and a grip, we might say. Vulcan enters into the picture. And it becomes an undeviating attitude. Some of this is cultivated in Sagittarius, where the disciple becomes reliably one-pointed, but by the time he reaches Capricorn, it crystallizes, it locks in, and nothing can break the fixity of the initiate intent upon the path, further progress upon the path of initiation. You know, let's just say that this true Syrian regime has been entered by the time you pass the temptations in the desert and enter the third degree later in that experience. Okay, so may that fixity be ours, and may we learn to use the will through the mind in a manner which is persistently reliable until we can develop an undeviating orientation towards ever-intensifying light. Here's a bit more from esoteric astrology. In Aquarius, the initiate consummates all that has been achieved in Leo through the influence of the sun. Well, the sun rules many things, including the soul and the monad. But mostly we think of it in terms of the personality, and yet, you know, it's a star, and it certainly rules the higher part of ourselves. For in Leo, there is almost a unique condition where humanity is concerned, as the sun governs all expressions, exoteric, esoteric, and hierarchical. Really, it's a veil, you know. We might say veiling, perhaps, Jupiter in the first instance, then Neptune, and then Uranus. Okay. It rules the personality, the soul, and the fourth grade of hierarchy. That's interesting, because the fourth grade of hierarchy is the hierarchy of monads. So, you know, this may be another way of saying that the sun is a symbol of the monad, that the sun. Now, let's just not make it too big. Okay, hence the sun, the physical sun, is lessened in its power in Aquarius. If the physical sun, if we say, if it represents the personality, is lessened in its power in Aquarius. there are different aspects to the sun, and according to which sun we're talking about, so we are speaking of different elevations in the human constitution. Okay, the third initiation has been undergone. And let's just say that Aquarius is one of those signs. Okay, is one of those signs in which the third initiation is taken, fourth initiation too, and even the fifth. And the light of the personality has been put out or dimmed, put out or dimmed by the light of the subjective sun. And let's just say through the process of decentralization. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't be decentralized in Leo. I think the really successful Leo individual does become very decentralized and becomes the relinquished point, you might say. But in Aquarius, there is this dispersive tendency and the kind of egocentric centralization experienced in early Leo is foregone and finally dissipated, melted away, dispersed, whatever word you want to use. There's a great decentralization occurring in Aquarius. The third initiation has been undergone, and the light of the personality has been put out. I mean, it still exists as an instrument, but we're not, our consciousness is not centered in it. Our consciousness is not centered at this point in the personality. Right. Centered. What did I say, centered? This is probably a British thing, you know. British English. Okay, dimmed by the light of the subjective sun, influencing the soul. Where is the subjective sun? Is it the heart of the sun? Is it the cosmic astral sun? Is this from the cosmic astral plane or from the cosmic mental plane as the heart of the sun? Well, working that out and the difference between the subjective sun and the heart of the sun, you know, some bit of a task there. There is much to think out here, but little more can be directly indicated. When you use a word like indicated, it's not even a direct statement. So there is indication, a direct indication, and there is a literal statement of fact, those three things. So he's kind of in that category called direct indication. There is much to think about here, but little more can be directly indicated, as the curious fact of the triple control by a planet constitutes one of the mysteries of initiation. And you know, it's not really a planet, is it? Not really a planet, but a star. And the sun is sometimes called a planet, but every astrologer knows it's not really a planet, and that there's a strong possibility that Jupiter is the really a veiled exoteric ruler of Leo, along with Neptune and Uranus that have been given. And when the Sun is standing for a non-sacred planet, there is one of those five non-sacred planets that has not been named. Kind of wonder, you know, there is a hypothesized planet called Rex, R-E-X, and generally means king or royalty and can be associated with Leo and with the Sun. So is that the non-sacred planet that's involved here? I worked with Charles Jayne in the year right before his death, and he was really into all of these undiscovered planets, and he used them, I think, in a very skillful and indicative way. I guess one of the lucky days of my life was when he walked into the Lucis Trust in the beginning of 1985 when I was working there. Was it 85? I think it was 85. And, yeah. And he wanted to talk to some people about astrology, and I just happened to catch him and began quite an intensified every Sunday morning relationship in astrology, driving out to his house in New York and learning what I could, and he died on the last day of that year. So there was a transference, and I've been able to make available to other astrologers, I think more equipped than I am in this area, some of what he had said, and they've developed it further. Anyway, the triple control by a planet, you know, let's just make a note, not really a planet, we know that, constitutes one of the mysteries of initiation. It is tied up with the relation between Leo and Aquarius, which we're certainly going to experience in this age, as the well-known astrologer, excellent astrologer, Dane Rudyard said, this is not just the age of Aquarius we're entering, this is the age of Aquarius Leo. Now, there's no such thing as a stick without two ends, he used to say. For Leo is unusual in having all its ruling influences concentrated through the medium of one planet. He keeps on referring to the Sun as a planet, but we just really have to understand that. And those who are, you know, not into the spiritual occultism, those who are not into astrology will immediately point to this and say, ah, astrologers don't know what they're talking about. They're calling the Sun a planet. That's the lowest level of interpretation. Of course, the Sun may be planetary to a central star around which it may be revolving. And certainly the whole seven solar systems, of which ours is one, it is theorized that they are revolving around the hub of the wheel known as the Pleiades. So to be planetary is to revolve around a central source. And we have to think of the word planet in that way, as well as related to our usual X number of planets. There are so many, maybe 115 or more, the Tibetan tells us. Leo indicates the height of achievement of the human soul, and we might say, therefore, mastery. At the fifth initiation, for Leo is the fifth sign, and has to be very active in creating what we know as the Master, who is a glorious sun, and let's just say the symbol of the Master is the sun. So there are some mysteries here about Leo and the fifth initiation, the sun and mastery. And, you know, if we're going to have what's called the relinquished point, now maybe I can find this thing, you know, if I try not. Okay. So where is, there it is, Alice Bailey Books, open, and then we go to, come along, and we go here to Esoteric Astrology, and we go to page 332, and we have here of Leo, the relinquished point, the one self, the relinquished point. Notice it's very interesting with Gemini, I serve the one, and then Cancer. The whole is seen as one, and then we have the one self. So in these three signs, Gemini, Cancer, and Leo, we have reference to this one self. And notice the relinquished point. We might call it the decentralized point, the point which is given up into the pointlessness of pure being. So let's just say, I'm going to say something here. I'm going to say Aquarius helps Leo relinquish the point through its dispersive, decentralizing kind of effect. Well, okay, friends. And then we'll be switching into another book. So even though, as usual, I didn't get my sort of chronometer going at exactly the right time, I will just say that this is the end of, what am I doing here? The fourth, third initiation discussion. Number four. But of course, I didn't really get this far. I didn't get this far, you know, when discussing these things with the Blue Rose Sisters. But I'm calling this sort of the redo series, in which I can expect that there will be sound. I did the silent movie version, you know, when we were having kind of our discussion in our Temple of Silence, and that's very fitting, the Temple of Silence. Well, there was certainly silence in that particular recording. So now, and today is, whatever day it is, it's the 3rd of September, and beginning of third initiation discussion, redo number 5, whenever I can, you know, and hopefully soon. So I'll get these to you for your study. I realize, I'm using kind of a spontaneous, informal method of dealing with this factual information. You know, I'm just giving you my response and my associations as they occur to me as I read these things. And maybe some light will flash forth for you and for me in these connections, in these Mercurian connections, so we will understand more and more. All right, so that should be about an hour's worth, a little bit more, I think, and we'll take it up a bit later. I had in mind, you know, to do all of these initiation series, the compilations, not so much where they are nested in the various books, but to topically study these matters so we can get a very concentrated idea about what the DK has offered to us and intensify our light on these subjects. So thank you very much, and we'll see you before long. Bye-bye.